Welcome to Discover Film. I'm your host, Jeff Howard, and today we're talking to writer-director Max Silver. Max made the great short film Trunk Space, which you can watch online at discoverfilm.net right now. You know, when I see a great short like Trunk Space, it makes me kind of wonder, how do these people manage to make such a great film with the resources involved in a short? Well, after talking to him, I think I completely understand how Max was able to make such a great film like Trunk Space. You really should watch Trunk Space before you listen to this interview, because there's going to be spoilers aplenty. Okay, you've been warned. Here's Max.
Started out as an actor in middle school because I think I just liked attention. And I liked evoking reactions out of people. And back then, the best way to do that was just to be kind of a silly person. So I got into acting at the suggestion of one of my babysitters. I think she was probably just trying to get me to be quiet, and she said that I should be an actor. So I started out in that world, and that took me through high school. But at the same time, I was making films with my brother and my friends at home with our, you know, back in middle school, my dad's VHS camera, straight to VHS. You couldn't edit. You had to shoot chronologically.
Right, you were editing in camera.
Editing in camera. My brother and I would love this special effect that we thought we discovered where you would shoot and you would cut the film and then you'd move an object in the frame and then you'd record again without moving the camera. And then in playback, it's like magic. So we could do people who are disappearing or reappearing. So we made a lot of films like that.
That's cool. And that's like middle and high school. You and your brother were doing that?
Yeah, that was middle and high school. And then we moved on to a mini DV camera at some point, and then we could start editing an iMovie back when that was new. And my brother and I, we made a film that might be a feature film in middle school just because we would keep working on it just consecutive weekends throughout the whole year.
Was he older?
He's younger? Older. Yeah, he's so a year and a half brother. Older. He's an artist in Chicago. He's a painter.
Were you growing up in Chicago?
We grew up in Maryland.
Maryland?
Yeah.
There's a Maryland license plate in your film, isn't there? It's New Hampshire. It's
New Hampshire, yeah.
My bad.
Live
my
free
bad.
Or die.
Everything outside
East Coast,
of California.
Though.
Yeah.
Yeah. All those East Coast states are the same, so.
No.
So we did that, and I was acting a little bit professionally in the theater world in D.C., which I was fine at, but my issue was that I think I enjoyed being a viewer more than a performer, and I had a bit of an issue being too self-aware. When I started to act on camera, I'm a little too kind of in my head.
Right, so transitioning from stage to like, acting on camera,
yeah.
you found yourself less comfortable?
Yeah, a little less comfortable with the camera in front of the lens. I would act in the films with my brother, and it was fine, but it wasn't acting, you know, it was just playing. And but I didn't have a lot of success auditioning for films. I would audition for plays and be fine. Audition for films didn't really go anywhere.
Because you go in for an audition, they'd have a camcorder sitting
there. Yeah, and I would just get a little in my head. I don't know what it was.
It's tough to be on camera.
Yeah, you have to just completely get in the red headspace, and I don't know if I'm cut out for that. And sort of on top of that, I was acting in a play in high school, and I had a small role, and I thought that it had the potential to be a really cool play, but it didn't really. You know, the director, no one really liked, and it was sort of felt flat. I mean, it was fine, but. I realized that I wanted to have more control over the final product. So that was sort of the start of this shift. And then I was really into acting though. I was considering, I visited some acting conservatories even for college, which thankfully I did not go to. Cause as soon as I went to college, I didn't act ever again, except in my own films. But, I just shifted completely towards what to me was playing, which is just making movies. I'd make movies with my friends in college, and it was then, because we had a film and cinema and media studies department, and sort of gradually realized that people just do this for their whole life. You know, some people they just keep making movies their whole life.
It's right, like a career. So you didn't do the thing where you saw a film, you're like, I want to be a filmmaker like said director. You were just in it.
Yeah, I was just I was
creating.
I was creating, and I was having a lot of fun doing it. And I was watching movies and TV and loving them. I mean, as long as I can remember, there are certain shows, certain stories that I would get so into, it's like I'm more into it than real life. Like, an early one was Alias, Joss Whedon, or Lost, you know, J.J. Abrams. Like, these shows I would just be so obsessed with, like, beyond my interest in anything else. I was just like, this is the most important thing. These stories and these characters just came to life. And I just wanted to live in those worlds. I still have that to this day. I can feel it with certain shows that it feels, it's like just a burning desire that I need to, like, I just can't wait for the next episode. Most recently, Twin Peaks Season 3 was just a complete obsession. Blew me away every millisecond of that season. I was in it 100%. And I guess that obsession with it just felt like it's just such an important part of my life, and I wanted to see if I could create something that other people would feel similarly about, that they'd look forward to watching, that they'd get enjoyment out of. And in college, I slowly realized that people actually do this for their life, and I didn't feel like a realistic goal for me. Just felt like I'm having a lot of fun doing this, so I'm going to keep making movies. But I also majored in economics because it felt like there wasn't enough work majoring in film. It's like, I'm just playing. I'm having so much fun. I should probably do something that's more challenging.
Yeah, and you weren't growing up near Hollywood where, you know,
right,
people's parents at the local public schools, sometimes there's people who work in
industry. Exactly, yeah. So it was completely foreign. I mean, Hollywood had this mysticism about it. Complete unknown. So I was just making films in college for fun, doing 24-hour...
Right, so your major was econ.
I ended up double majoring in economics and film. Neither of which was a difficulty. Like, I was just innately interested in both. I was, I major in film, and then I was looking at all the classes that I wanted to take in economics, and I was like, oh, I could just major in economics and all I'd have to do is an exam, because I'm already planning on taking all of these economics classes because they're just interesting innately. So, yeah, I double majored, but it was like I would just normally be taking those classes anyway, just game theory, behavioral economics. Another, I guess this keeps tying back in, but it's something else that draws me to film and storytelling is psychology, human psychology. My dad's a psychiatrist. And something that I really enjoy is getting to know people kind of on the deeper level, not the surface level. And I think that's one reason that I like writing and also reading and watching films and stories, is that you're getting to know these people intimately, their motivations, their, you know, their ghost, their real deep down, what drives them. And yeah, behavioral economics was, like, right up my alley. It's great.
So when you were having fun making films, were you sitting down and writing something out first, or were you working stuff out on camera?
So back in the real old days, we would just work it out on camera with my brother and friends. And then in college, I was writing. I actually started my interest in screenwriting in high school, and I think it was, like, a little bit of figuring out the magic. I met a screenwriter at some event, and he sent me one of his screenplays that he wrote. And it was the first time I ever read a screenplay. And that feeling was incredible, like the feeling of reading a movie. And after that, I started buying books on screenwriting and started writing. I wrote my first feature in high school. It's terrible. Absolutely awful, but I got it done, and there's a movie called, I'm sure you're familiar, How to Write a Movie in 21 Days, which I think has a lot of really good nuggets, and I still read it, and it's a good motivator for kind of reminding you, in the end, how simple it is to get it on the page. Getting it, making it good is a whole other story, but, you know, just getting it down there is the first step. So, I just started reading books on screenwriting, and I'm still reading them. I love it. I love the study of narrative, and I think it's still about unearthing the magic trick of making a story that feels natural and feels like a real-life story, and how do you get there?
Yeah, yeah. It's a combination of the artistic and the technical, because exactly. If you miss the technical things of screenwriting, you get a disaster. But right. If there's no inspiration, it's also not worth it.
Yeah. And I think that I've always been someone who's split-brained in that way, with a technical and an artistic side.
I would think your college career would prove that.
I guess it shows that. Yeah.
You call yourself split-brained. I'd call it well-balanced.
Oh, thank you.
Right? I mean, that's a nice balance to have.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, it's interesting to think about that my older brother is an artist, and my younger sister is applying to med school. So it's like, she's all science, my brother's all art, and I sort of got a little bit of both, maybe.
Yeah.
I've always been that way. So I was writing films in college, and also becoming more aware of the production side of it, which is another side of the magic trick. You know, that's the logistics side. And so I got into, I would write and direct my own shorts, and then I produced a short in my junior year, that I was sort of testing the waters of production, and I wanted to create a film where we weren't limited technically, where we could just try to tell a story that we wanted to tell without a mini DV camera. I wanted it to look like a real movie and to see what we could do there. And it sort of ballooned this short film, that a friend of mine wrote and directed. And, we were on a study abroad trip, a photography trip in Rome, and he started telling me about this story that he had been working on since high school, this fantasy about a world where Rome never fell and continued to blossom, and it took over the entire globe and progressed 2,000 years, and now it's present day, but Rome has taken over everything. So he has this whole world in his head, and I thought it was a really cool idea and something that we could maybe try to find a small portion of that story and tell it like a character piece, set in that world. And I think I was ready to just push myself and see what we could do.
Right. Push yourself with the challenge of the scope.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
yeah.
Also push yourself to be a producer, not right. The writer and director.
Exactly. Which part of me is naturally just a producer, because I love working with people. I love bringing people together. And I'm good at the logistics and budgeting and scheduling. I love bossing people around, so good at being an AD. And, so that was interesting, and I think I just wanted that challenge. So that was – we started that sophomore year, and then we filmed it in the fall of junior year. We worked on it all summer, and the production ended up kind of ballooning. Like, we started out by knowing that we needed a costume designer, so – we knew no one in Minneapolis. We knew one woman who was a guest professor at Carleton, which is where I went. And she introduced us around. But it was a really interesting challenge to start with nothing and to say, we want to make a real film. So we found our costume designer on Craigslist. And we didn't know what we were getting into, but we knew we needed Romanesque costumes. We needed someone to kind of... You know, art department is so important to a film, especially a film that's going to be a sci-fi kind of period piece.
Right, and Romanesque 2,000 years later. So,
exactly.
So a far evolved from togas, but
yes,
starting from that.
Exactly. So we met with her, and she was just amazing. Sheila Heil, she was a costume designer for the theater, but she was in an off-season, so she didn't have a summer project. She wanted something to sink her teeth into. And she just signed on board, and it was amazing. We didn't expect to find someone that great who would just do it, but it was the first person we met. And so she signed on, and then it was like each decision justified the next. So we were like, oh, we need a production designer, because we have a few props that we're going to need. And then, oh, we need a director of photography who's going to be really good. We have our classmates who are great DPs, but they're up and comers, and they haven't shot on Red, and we wanted this to look great. So I stayed at my friend's house. His family lives in Minneapolis, and I crashed there all summer. And we just went from knowing no one to having an entire cast and crew that was, professional from the Twin Cities. We had a crew of maybe 25, 30 people.
You actually shot it?
We shot it. Yeah.
The school year?
We shot it during the school year. Yeah.
Did you wing something with the professor that it was an independent studies kind of, you didn't get credit?
No, unfortunately, no credit. It was all credit in the first half.
All in your free time.
Yeah. The first half of that term, I did not do as well in my classes as the second half. We shot it over midterm break. We had a lot of our classmates were on the crew, like, as, you know, the AC or the second AC and all the extras and stuff. And we went to the town of Northfield and we posted and we reached out to the community. We had 50 extras show up at 6 a.m. on a Saturday to be in this crowded scene. And everyone went through wardrobe. It ended up being a bigger production than I've worked on since then as a producer, which is kind of ironic that it was the first one. And yeah, I mean, there were some lessons learned, definitely, but it was one of the most educational experiences.
Yeah, that's why I'm sure it was its own version of film school, even though you were doing an undergraduate film program.
Yeah.
It almost sounds like graduate film school on the side.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I haven't been to graduate film school, but it was basically like teach yourself. And that's how I learned screenwriting, and that's how I learned producing, and really everything in the film world. My college had film classes, but a lot of it was about theory and history. And then we had some production classes, which I learned a lot in, but they were undergraduate production. So it was very much introductory, and it was, so I wanted to, push myself.
If only you could have had someone do a documentary on this.
Yeah, actually, that would have been interesting.
it sounds like really just this incredible effort of community.
So that was a great experience. And then the next year, we all made our thesis films. I think we, as a class, pushed ourselves further than the department expected us to push ourselves. And I think that it was maybe part of what contributed to them introducing more narrative professors, more production-oriented coursework. That was my college experience. And then at a certain point, I realized, I think, yeah, maybe junior year, I just sort of thought that I would want to keep playing around in films.
Right, because you could have finished and then gone into the world of finance.
Right, which I considered and still consider during some of my, you know, some of the slower months. So I'm thinking, I wonder if I should just do that. And then I would look into it a little bit, and then I realized that although I enjoy aspects of economics, I don't think I could live in a world just surrounded by economists and not by storytellers. Let's see, where was I? Junior year, decided that the next magic trick I wanted to figure out was Hollywood. I think through Nova Roma, I figured out how something that looks like a movie is made, just all the different departments. And, you know, at the beginning of that process, I didn't know what a production designer did relative to an art department, to an art coordinator, or, what a key grip was relevant to a gaffer, things like that. So it was very, you know, we learned sort of the magic of how you create an image.
Right. But when that finished, you said to yourself, I'm going to go to L.A. when I graduate?
Well, I don't know when the decision was made, but at a certain I knew that I wanted to figure out L.A. I wanted to figure out Hollywood. I wanted to learn how it's sort of like I felt I figured out the bottom tier of a film production, but there are so many tiers above it that I didn't even know what they were. Things about financing, things about attaching actors, you know, massive budgets, multi-year-long projects, and just kind of breaking into and figuring out how all these different roles interplay. Agents, managers, studio executives, creatives.
Right. Yeah. I mean, you're a natural academic, I think, so it sounds like you're approaching it all like with an academic perspective in a way.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, I didn't think about that. I was lucky enough to get an internship between my junior and senior years in L.A. through a Carl alum, Laura Pursley, who at the time was finishing, was in post, I think, on a feature that she produced, and she just wanted a Carlton intern to come out and kind of help her out. And I applied, and maybe partially due to Nova Roma, I got the internship. I was just so stoked. And my roommate, who lives in Orange County, allowed me to stay at his house. He actually needed a house sitter for the summer. So came out here, My main expense was a rented car, and then I just lived in this my friend's house in Orange County in Huntington Beach, and I commuted to Burbank.
I was going to say, that must have been a commute.
Yep, it was. It was about 2 hours. But fortunately, I didn't work every day. It was a three-day-a-week internship. So, but I was able to just sort of take the first step to figuring out the city, to getting to know a little bit of the areas. I mean, it was just so, so vast. And it was very typical. Like, you see the Hollywood sign and you just get those butterflies and you're like, I'm here. Like,
well, and you had been such a fan of television and film. And so, yeah, all these landmarks, all these things that are, you know, if you're paying attention, I've known people who moved to L.A., and they're like, all these streets are character names, you know, like Bundy and Chandler and
whatnot. Fun. I didn't even think about that.
You know, because there's just writers working at Warner Brothers on sitcoms who are like, I got to name this character. And I drove Chandler this morning.
Oh, yeah. Funny. You know? That's really funny. Uh-huh.
That's one transplant pointed that out to me. And I'm like, well, you are right.
Yeah.
That's probably where they got Al Bundy.
Yeah. It's
Bundy Drive. But, yeah. But anyway.
That's cool.
So let me not distract you. So you had that internship for a summer, which is really cool. So before you even finish school, you get your you get a feel for Hollywood.
Yeah, and I before that I didn't know where I wanted to move after graduation, but spending that time in LA, I sort of felt like, yeah, I want to come back here. During those couple of months, I just barely dipped my toe in the water and had a great time. I almost made a short film that year. It fell apart because my producer bailed, and it felt like it was too much.
Out here with your free time,
right? Yeah,
just working 3 days a week. You had 4 day weekends to.
I received the Panavision New Filmmaker Grant for a short film, and I wanted to shoot on film on 35 because that's one thing that we didn't have at Carleton. I found someone who said that he wanted to be a producer, and I thought, great. You want to help me put together this film that I wrote? It's a short film that I wrote and directed. Very simple. The only real challenge is that I want to shoot it on 35, and I haven't shot on 35 before. So got to find other people who have done it so that they can teach us a little bit. But we had a grant from Panavision. We had all the equipment. And it ended up because it took Panavision a while to get back to me. So by the time I got accepted, I think I only had 2 weeks before I was leaving L.A., so I had to put it all together very quickly. And we had 1 week of pre-production. We were halfway through, and then producer bailed. And I think I spent one more day working on it, and I was, like, at Home Depot shopping for art department stuff. I mean, I had no crew, doing everything, doing storyboards, rewrites. And I was so miserable, and when that producer dropped out, it after a day of working on it, I thought, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to. It was just too much. I don't know.
No, that would have been too much. If you had finished school and you were in that situation and you had 6 months to get it done with all the heavy lifting yourself, understandable.
Right.
But you were going back for your senior year in two weeks.
Yeah.
What are you going to do? Like, that would have been an incredible story if you'd actually pulled off.
Yeah, it would have been. And that movie never got made, but I still like the script, and maybe I'll shoot it some other day. It's a very simple film. So I went back to school and did senior year. It was just amazing. We all, my group of friends, the other film majors who were more interested in the narrative side of things, were kind of my crew, and we all crewed up on each other's thesis films, and we shot each other's, and gave each other support, and that was an incredible experience. And then we completed our thesis films. And then at that point, senior year, we were chatting about, oh, what are you doing after graduation? And I told, you know, my friends that I'm going to move to LA, and if anyone wants to come with me, it'd be a lot of fun. And we ended up roping in four other filmmakers.
So five total?
Five total. We did it road trip style.
So after graduation, five people from probably various parts of the country graduate in the Midwest.
Yep.
And just head out to LA together after graduation.
Yeah. And Rachel didn't really know us that well, and it was three boys and two girls.
Well, what was your first bigger step once you were here? You started working.
So.
Or do you want to just tell me, was...
No,
is Trunk Space one of the first shorts you made after moving out here? Or?
Trunk Space, yeah, it's the first narrative short we made out here. It is kind of a funny... I'll just give you the short story to get there, but
sure.
It was my first internship was for a producer who... a producer in quotes, who
had various projects at various stages of
exactly,
development.
Exactly, yeah. And he was always in a domestic argument with his wife when I came over, screaming at each other right before they opened the door to greet me. It was really funny. And this guy who fancied himself a producer, so it was my first freebie.
He's just looking for a kid to work for free?
Yeah, exactly.
And he was full of crap.
Full of crap, yeah, absolutely. And so while I was interning for him, I was still looking for other internships, and I found this paid internship, low pay, but something, at a management company, and I went in, Strong Management, manager Beverly Strong, and that, she said I could start out as an intern. She had no problem with me, you know, giving me a shot. So the next day, the film producer, in quotes, asked me to help out at his garage sale on a Saturday. And that's when I told him I could no longer intern for him. Got out just in the nick of time. So then I interned at this management company. And on my second day, the assistant didn't show up. Didn't call in sick. Didn't let us know that he was going to be late. Just never showed up. And it was the manager, her assistant, and me. And so that was my second day. By the third day, he didn't show up again. I sat at his desk. By the fourth day, he showed up and said he was quitting. So I was promoted to assistant
right.
within a week.
But you went from intern to full-time.
Intern to full-time.
In that first week, which
yeah.
is cool.
Yeah, it was great. It was it was definitely trial by fire. It was learning by doing, which is the way I've always done things. So it worked out pretty well. And I just jumped in. Yeah, within like 4 days, I was the assistant. And that was great.
And was it talent management?
It was talent management.
So completely, very much part of the industry.
Yeah.
And yet completely divorced from all the stuff you've learned previous.
Exactly.
I mean, because the management of talent,
yeah.
what goes on there.
It was great. Yeah, I was learning about this whole other aspect of the industry, and from the actor's perspective, from the manager's perspective, I got to know what an agent does, what a manager does. She was very supportive of me wanting to learn more about directing, and she came from Anonymous Content, which is a management and a production company. She used to be a manager there before she started her own business, so she introduced me to the HR head. They didn't have any jobs open, but she just made an introductory email, and I went in for a general interview with her. And 2 weeks later, she said that the assistant to one of their directors was leaving and that she could, you know, maybe get me an interview with this director. And I got the job, and it was my only... I mean, I've really gotten spoiled with these jobs, like... Right.
You haven't had to sit around for 3 months going on 1,000 interviews.
Exactly. Yeah. And I mean, I've had friends who have to do that, and I think it's just luck of the draw, really. So it was my first and only application interview for full time job, and I somehow got it, and it was a big shift in my career. And so I worked with Malcolm Venville, this director at Anonymous Content, for 3.5 years as his assistant, and it was a chance to get to know what a director does, what their daily life is like. I learned he mostly does commercials. He's done a few features. When I was working for him, we did mostly commercials, and we were developing his next longer term projects. But he's British, so I worked out of London a lot. I traveled the world on these commercial, big time commercial shoots, working with Oscar winning cinematographers, production designers, just the top of the top crew members, ADs who I learned a huge amount from, you know, getting to know them, these ADs who've worked with Scorsese and Fincher and things. So that was like, that felt like the next step up. Like, oh, before I was just my corner. I was just in the little corner of the industry. Now I'm shooting at Paramount and, you know, traveling on these big commercials and working with these big clients and having an office to go to every day, And that was, yeah, that was definitely, I think, the best possible job I could have gotten. And I ended up being creatively involved with Malcolm. We rewrote one of his features kind of early on in my time with him. And then later on, I co-wrote a television show, a one-hour drama with him and one other writer. And we did the whole show Bible. We did two scripts, and Anonymous Content ended up optioning that show for, I think, a year. And now it's being, I think various other producers have optioned it since then. It hasn't been made. It's sort of an expensive pilot, but, that process was incredibly helpful for me. Incredibly valuable. And, yeah, I mean, that was, it was a very enjoyable time. Obviously, in hindsight, in the moment, you don't always realize, you know, the pluses that you have. But although I think I did with this job, because it was like, it was just very different from any other job that my friends had. And, you know,
that's that's a pretty unique opportunity.
So that was really great. And then it was towards the end of my time with Malcolm that I made Trunk Space, to bring it full circle. I wrote it in the summer of, I guess, 2015. I can't remember.
Before you were working for him, you wrote it?
No, during.
Why? During.
It was during one of the summers. It was, I was motivated because one of my friends made a short film that I worked on, and that sort of motivated me to make my short film. I thought, oh. Right.
So you had been so focused on working in the business,
mm-hmm,
that for a short while you weren't all about producing your next thing.
Yes. Yeah. I put a pin in that. I was like, let me just devote full time to this, because it's very difficult to be an assistant and to do anything else.
Yeah.
You have to be 100% committed every waking second to this person. And you can do other things, but they're always going to be the second priority if it comes down to it.
Yeah. So one of those, when he was out of town, you had enough time to write Trunk Space?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It started, Rachel was the start of Trunk Space getting made, because we were coming home from set on one of our friends' films, and we'd parked a car. I think it was the same parking spot that we parked in when we visited my house for the first time, the house that we ended up staying in on Van Ness Ave. And we parked the car there, and then we were talking about, she was asking me, like, are you ever going to make another short film? And I said, yeah, I just need to find a producer. You know, if I can find someone who can produce it, then I will make something, because I can't do both. That's what I learned from my Panavision film that didn't end up going. I needed a partner. And she said, oh, well, I'll produce it. And I was like, oh, really? Because I feel like I asked you before and you said no, because she's someone that I always trusted completely to do any level of responsibility or work. I knew that I could trust her. You know, I don't know, just a feeling like, yes, if you're on board, then I know I can just throw anything at you and you'll get it and you'll be responsible for it. And I feel like I had asked her previously and she had maybe not wanted to.
For other things or for Trunk Space?
Well, Trunk Space didn't exist yet, right, just for a hypothetical film. And I don't know if she remembers it differently. Maybe she does, but
like you had hinted, why don't we become one of those couples where you produce and I direct?
Right. Except that we weren't a couple yet. Oh. We were just friends.
Okay.
So we were just friends, but I always had so much faith in her that, she was my first choice to produce anything that I made. But I feel like I'd asked her and she had said no. And so that's why I'd been looking for other producers. But then we were coming home from this one set. She said, okay, no, I'll do it. Yeah. If you have something you want to make, yeah, I'll produce it. So, great. So that's what started me brainstorming ideas.
And so you hadn't written it yet. So you had a producer now.
Yeah.
Without a project.
Yes. So I was like, okay, great. Let's make something. I'm going to start brainstorming and I'm going to start pitching you ideas. And so then it was in the evenings, I would always pitch her a different idea, something I just get inspiration from wherever. And so the idea for Trunk Space came about during one of my techniques to start the creative process. You know, you can get inspiration from a lot of different places. And Reddit has a subreddit called Writing Prompts, which is great. And it's something that I do just for exercises, just to get in the flow. People will just post a prompt, and then other people will post their own short stories in response. So I don't usually post, but I'll sometimes write and then just keep it for myself. Spoiler alert. But so the writing prompt was, what if someone who goes around killing hitchhikers picks up a serial killer hitchhiker?
Right.
And so I thought that was interesting. And I wrote it as a short story. And I had it be a female who picks up a male. and they end up both being killers. And I don't even know if I finished the short story because I was so excited by it that I wanted to write it as a screenplay. And I pitched it to Rachel. I don't remember specifically when in the process, if I'd already had it as a script, but I think before I wrote it as a script, I just pitched her the idea of two girls, because in a film you need to have, you know, more dialogue rather than internal thoughts, which is how the short story was. So two girls pick up this hitchhiker, and you think that the hitchhiker is going to kill them the whole time. And, you know, one of the girls is like, no, we shouldn't do it. The other kind of wants to do it. And then the twist ending is that they're actually going around killing hitchhikers, and they're, and it gives a whole new meaning to the whole debate that they were having at the beginning and in the car, is actually about something else than you thought it was. And she loved that idea. So she's like, yeah, you should write that. So I wrote it as a script, sort of thinking that, oh, this will be easy to shoot. It's self-contained. It's in a car. We can just shoot it in the desert. We don't need any permits. We'll just kind of do it real quick. And it'll be a cheap and fun little exercise, the character study, you know? Because right. I'm more interested right. in things
that are...
A
couple of car mounts, you're thinking.
Exactly, yeah. So, there's definitely some lessons learned in that department. But so I wrote the script, and she's like, yeah, I think we should shoot this. So, that's how Trunk Space started. And we... I think that was in the summer that I wrote it. And then, so we shot it in the fall. Process kicked off with finding our DP through Mandy.com, which is, I think it can be a very valuable resource for people who are trying to find new projects, but it's very much hit or miss. You can get, involved with a lot of projects that aren't at a professional quality, or you can get really lucky and find someone who you collaborate with on many other projects, which is what happened with us. We posted for DP. We needed someone who could provide their own camera. You know, we had a low rate to offer them, a very low rate, but something to attract, you know, more than the bottom level. I think we had like 300 or 400 submissions or replies to our post. We narrowed it down to about 150 that were okay. From there, we watched
just looking at the reels or,
well, very, yeah, within 1 second, you can just throw away a lot of the applicants. You can just tell. But then I think we had about 150 that we looked at more seriously. From those, we reached out to maybe 20. And from those, we met with like 8 or 9. And the one that we ended up using, Stephen Tringali, was, I think he was our last meeting, and he submitted late to the application. So we had already met with 8 or so DPs. We had our first and second, third choices. We had people that we liked. And then there was this one more that came in, and we were like, should we meet with him? Yeah, yeah, we should just meet with him. You know, this guy, his stuff looks really great, so let's just meet with one more. And we met with him, and Rachel thought the meeting went really poorly. And so she was expecting me afterwards to say, like, okay, let's go to one of our other ones. But as soon as we left the restaurant, I was like, let's get this guy. And we went with him because during the meeting, there's two things that, I don't know if this level of detail is interesting, but just going off.
Yeah, do it.
So the two things that made me instinctively know that this was the one. The first one was I asked him how he would approach shooting the film. And whereas other DPs launched into a very detailed description of approach and film equipment that they would use and visual style and things, Steven's answer was, well, I think that we should discuss more what visual style you want, and then that'll determine how we approach it. And I was like, oh, that's a good answer, because you don't have all the information yet to know how you'll shoot it.
Right, had they seen the script?
Or? Yeah, yeah, he'd read the script, but he and I had
But instead of him directing it,
yeah.
He turned to the director and said, it's going to depend on your vision.
Exactly, and that showed that he was really thinking about it, and not just giving an answer to give one.
Well, I have to say, it's beautifully shot.
Oh,
I mean, the cinematography is outstanding.
Yeah.
I mean, if you had told me that one of the cinematographers who worked on the commercials for your old boss had volunteered a weekend to you. Like, I mean, it looks that good.
Oh.
I mean, it really...
Yeah, I agree. That's all Steven and his crew. We really lucked out with finding him. And now we're very good friends with him and his wife. And we're all... It was the start of another kind of Los Angeles friendship, that these things just start on a project and you don't know who it's going to be. But a lot of these people you end up staying in touch with and becoming friends with. And so, that's how that worked. And we shot it. And, you know, we had a lot of other crew members, but and other kind of co-producers who helped Rachel with the production process. But it was largely on Rachel's shoulders to make it all come together, and which ended up being, you know, a huge amount of work for her. And it was the first time that she was doing it. But as expected, she got it all done, and it all went really, really smoothly. And since then, I realized how rare that is on a low-budget short, or on really any production, to go really smoothly. It's not always a given. And sort of that's what I expected, because I've been working at this time in commercials with these amazing ADs and production teams and just the highest level of professionalism that then I came to take as the normal. And that still to this day helped serve me as a producer by knowing how things can run if you do your work ahead of time properly. So it kind of gave me this standard of quality to live up to. But our production had, even though we prepared as much as possible, we had some major hiccups, like on our first shoot day, and, you know, the whole film basically is set in a car. First shoot day, the picture car was 3 hours late, and that was the only thing we were shooting that day. So it didn't get off on a great foot to begin with.
You skipped something that I got to ask you about.
Oh, yeah.
Which is casting.
Oh, yes.
Because casting. Your cast is also superb.
That we really lucked out. We, through a friend, actually a friend from my time at Beverly Strong's management company, who now worked in casting, she introduced me to a casting director who was trying to, you know, get more credits as a casting director. She was normally a casting associate on TV shows. She wanted to be casting director, so we got her for a huge discount, you know, basically just gas money, and she put out a posting, you know, on Actors Access and Breakdown Express for the short film. And because we offered SAG ultra low budget minimum rather than nothing, we got a different tier of actors. And we found that the pool of actors in LA who are just hungry to do anything who are very talented is just enormous. So we had several days of auditions and we found these three incredible actors. We actually had the girls, Jessica and Kate, audition for the opposite roles. And it was Rachel who suggested when we were watching the footage later for callbacks, she's like, you should, what about like having these girls play the opposite, you know, these two, but switch them. And that ended up being a really great idea. And so in callbacks, we did that and it worked out really well. As a director, most of your work is just finding the right actors. And then once they're there, you know, maybe a slight shift this way or that.
Most of your work of the performance is finding the right actors.
Right.
A whole lot of other work for that director. But
a whole lot of other work. But, I mean, once you're on set, it's like the DP is in charge of the image, and your producer and AD are in charge of the schedule, and the actors are in charge of the acting. So you're there to kind of supervise things and make sure that it's all working in line with the vision, and make sure that the art department, who isn't having any conversations with the actors, are actually working towards the same final goal, and, you know, keeping the tone consistent across all these departments. But you're not micromanaging, you know, maybe some directors do, but you're not micromanaging every collaborator. You're creating a team that together will create something new.
And you're providing a lot of support, but I'm going to jokingly mention to you that you obviously haven't been in the situation where there's a horrible director on set.
Right.
Or maybe you have, but probably you haven't, because, boy,
it makes a big
difference.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, being the leader of the team and the attitude and setting the tone for the production set is a big part of it.
But it's good you don't take credit for everything.
I
think it's healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely couldn't, even if I wanted to. I mean, it's like the director's job, I think, the less the director does is better for everyone else. Within a certain, you know, umbrella.
Well, good directors make it look easy, and good directors, everyone goes, I could do that, because the director is not creating drama.
Right. Hopefully. Yeah. I tried to not create too much drama. the talent, it was such an honor to work with such talented actors. It was the first time as a director I'd worked with real professional actors. Nova Roma was the producer. Those actors were amazing, but I wasn't directing them. Trunk Space, I mean, it was my first time doing a table read. It was my first time doing all of these things, doing a rehearsal. It was like everything was new.
Yeah, you got to rehearse a bit?
Yeah, we rehearsed a good amount. Ended up being, a lot of the rehearsal was in camera because our schedule was tight, and when you have a scene that's 8 pages long in a moving vehicle, you just run it, you know. Yeah. You're not picking up little snippets, except maybe towards the end when you're like, oh, I need this line or that line. But generally,
it's a very different kind of directing too, because you're not there. They're in the
moving car. Yeah, they're in a different vehicle.
And you're listening on headphones.
Yeah, and watching on a wireless monitor or during some takes in the trunk of the car. Yeah, sometimes I had to be. I mean, a lot of the time I could be in the car with them, just in a section of the car that wasn't visible, like squished behind the seat. And I'm in the three shot of the vehicle, I'm actually behind the passenger seat with the monitor.
Because, yeah, your back seat. Rider is actually, yeah, she's not sitting central.
Exactly, yeah. So I'm on the other side, and the sound guy was in the trunk with his recorder, and so we were really packed in there. And it was about, like, I was looking at the image, and so I could tell if I leaned to the right, I could see my hair. If I leaned to the left, I could see my hair, so I just gotta be right here in the middle.
Well, that's good that you had...
Yeah.
You had the wireless monitor. You
yeah. Had to watch that. Yeah, that was absolutely necessary. So we did not get the whole film shot in our first 3 days of principal photography. We spent a lot of time on the fight scene, and we got that whole thing shot, and I was incredibly happy with how it turned out. And actually, we have a much longer version of it that we cut down for time, but we shot a lot more of that scene. But we didn't get all of the shots in the car, so we knew we had to come back out for pickups. And so I think after day one, we knew we were going to need pickups because of the lateness of the car and some other issues that came up. So at that point, I decided that we're just going to get every shot until it's what it needs to be, and we're not going to worry about if we go over, you know, or we don't make our day, which we didn't. So then we came out, we did a rough cut, and we came out 3 or 4 weeks later, and we did another set of pickups. We did 2 more days out in the desert. Same.
Did you add anything to the shot list after the edit?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So we added some close-ups and, you know, some other transitional shots that we knew we needed.
But you didn't know you needed them until you looked at a cut.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And then some shots that were previously scheduled, but we didn't get to, and then some reshoots. So we came back out, we did 2 more days in the desert, and then we did one day out in Joshua Tree with no actors. And just me and the DP and like a camera assistant. And we went out, you know, way out to Joshua Tree. I had gone out there previously to scout just the desert areas and, you know, what angles for kind of the opening sequence of them driving. So we went out and we shot that for a day.
Second unit stuff.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So we had 3 pickup days, and then we came back, we did more editing, and then, we found more shots that we needed that were all close ups. So we did then 1 more pickup day just in a parking lot in Griffith Park, close-ups of different elements in the car, you know, feet, hands, eyes, that type of thing. And then we cut it for 8 months or so. And the editor was an assistant editor at Rock, Paper, Scissors in Santa Monica, big editing house. So he was doing it kind of in his free time. And because it was often evenings or it was little sections throughout the day, he and I didn't have a lot of sit-down sessions. So it was a very long process. He would have to send me
cuts. So it took 8 months, but it was probably, if you'd done, but it wasn't a lot of minutes.
Exactly.
Per month.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it was very spread out, and it was very difficult to edit that way. And it was the first time I was working with an editor who wasn't myself. Just because you would see a cut and there's like so much that you want to try, but you don't know if the things you're going to try, you're going to keep. So you have to write it all down because it's all via email. So you got to be like, oh, at, you know, 5 minutes and 8 seconds, can we try to extend that angle just a little bit longer? But then next time you're like, oh, that's too long, you know, bring it down. And I think when you're getting into that micromanage-y section of the edit, it's very difficult to do that. And I don't know, it's still the only editor I've worked with, so I don't know how other people do it, but it took a long time, and he did a lot of work on it, and huge amount of work. I think we had 60 project files, 60 edits, versions of it. During that time, so when we originally went out to Joshua Tree, it ended up being overcast the whole day. Got no sun. So we have all these shots, but they're kind of out of visual consistency with the rest of the film. And so Steven, the DP, the whole time was like, look, if you ever want to go back out to Joshua Tree, we could reshoot it in bright daylight. It would match better. And I was kind of pushing it down the road a little bit, like, let's just keep working on the edit and see what we really need, because if we're going to go back out there, I don't want to have to go back out there again. Let's make sure we know exactly what we need. So we cut the whole film. It was basically done. And then we realized that it would look better with blue sky rather than gray sky. So we, Steven and I, went back out there one last time, like our eighth day, and we just shot the exact same shots that we had previously done, except now it's a beautiful blue sky. And that's how we, so all those opening shots are from that. And the blue sky really does add a lot of visual
quality. It looks great.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that is a great message to your viewer of you're watching cinema here.
You know? Right, yeah.
I mean, besides your aspect ratio, you're showing this beautiful expanse, this landscape.
Yeah.
With a blue sky. Yeah, if it, boy, that would have been gray. It would have been a whole different
right, line. Exactly. And the blue sky really is the only color in the film because everything else is so gray and muted. You know, like tan, the sand, the car, the wardrobe. It's all very muted, and the sky adds a lot of visual punch.
Yeah. And I don't know, my mind's eye, I could be wrong, but wasn't there a blue sky out the windows when they're talking?
Absolutely,
so,
yeah.
So
the
it's
whole
another
time.
Match thing, too?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. And at the end in the fight, beautiful blue sky with the polarizer bringing it out. And it was, in hindsight, it almost feels necessary. You know, of course, like the things that happen by luck when you're shooting a film are sometimes for better or worse at the moment, but in hindsight, usually you kind of look at it and like, oh, actually, this adds something that I didn't plan on. Like the short film that Rachel and I shot this summer that we're in post on is at the beach, and we had wildly inconsistent weather throughout the shoot. So the shot, reverse shot, has completely different backdrops. One is cloudy, one is bright sky. And but we have no choice because it's just like that's what it was when we shot it. But now, looking at the cut, it works really well, and it makes one actor's single have a totally different mood than the other actor's single. And I think it doesn't take the viewer out of the experience because it's not too drastic, but it gives like, it almost looks intentional. Like, oh, I can't believe you waited until it was cloudy to shoot this guy's singles to give it this atmosphere. And then you waited till it was sunny to shoot her singles so that it had this different feeling. So it's, you know, those like the things that happen by luck. It's just, you got to go with it sometimes. Or sometimes you got to reshoot it, as the case was with our opening.
Well, it's interesting what you say about reshoots too, because I've had so many conversations with filmmakers where if you don't plan for reshoots, you're really hurting yourself.
Yeah.
Because that's one of the reasons why Hollywood stuff has the level it does is because reshoots are scheduled.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so many shorts are scheduled, they're going to shoot in a weekend, and then what you get is what you get. And it really does handcuff you.
Yeah, and that's one of the lessons that I learned out here is that everyone does reshoots. Everyone does pickups. Even major movies that are great sometimes reshoot enormous sections of it. And that's part of what you have to tell yourself as a filmmaker and as a writer. If the quality of what you're creating isn't what you want it to be, that doesn't mean stop. That doesn't mean you're on the wrong track. That just means that you haven't finished the process yet. And even if you shoot your movie and it's not what you want it to be, can you fix it? You know, and it's like sometimes, you know, I imagine that every great film has some stories about how it wasn't great, and then they had this other idea, and they went back, and they redid it, and then now it works. But you don't know that whole story leading up to it.
Very few films. I think only the Coen brothers.
Right,
the,
exactly.
Right, the word is the Coen brothers. You shoot the script and
it's,
you're done.
It's perfect. Yeah.
Well, it's normally perfect, but not always.
Right, not always. Yeah,
yeah. I'm a huge fan.
Yeah, me too. They're definitely my favorite filmmakers.
So you actually already got to one of my later questions, which is, what have you done since Trunk Space? But actually, before you say what have you done since Trunk Space, I'm under the assumption that you probably had a really great festival run.
So we had a great festival run. We went to the festivals that were here in LA. Went to your festival, obviously, which I think was our first. I think it was our premiere.
Was it a premiere?
I think so. Yeah, it was early on at least. So yeah, I mean, it was a fantastic experience. Very long process. It feels like it's so far in the rearview mirror now. But it's just so we're done with the festival run, and we're releasing it online. Tomorrow, I don't know when this is going to come out, but on the 5th of December. And we're really excited to just get it out there so that anyone can see it who hasn't yet. And more excited to not have anything to do with it anymore and be focused on the future projects.
Full confession here. Max and I talked for like 2 hours. And I got to be honest, the whole thing was interesting. That was a really hard podcast to edit down.
but edit down I did. All right, time for the business. Please go to discoverfilm.net and watch Trunk Space if you haven't already. In fact, you should go to discoverfilm.net and watch a load of shorts that you can see there. Check out the Sherman Oaks Film Festival and Film Invasion LA at their respective websites. And keep discovering film.